What if you could talk with an AI and without ever touching any code, you could just iterate through and have it write and execute an application for you? You didn't need to open up a new VS Code environment or a terminal window because Devin, your AI personal software developer, had everything it needed in its own software environment. Now, this seems like a really powerful tool, but not a huge breakthrough just in the context of what kind of code an AI can write. I've seen numerous developers and even Hope, who I spoke with, who does the Devs Who Can't Code series with me, who aren't hugely impressed. They see it as a small benefit and an improvement, but a lot of these things ChatGPT and GitHub Copilot can already do. But I think from the perspective of a developer, what they weren't realizing is the degree of accessibility for a tool that can do this without the user ever needing to touch code. But in taking the time to think and expand on what this could mean and how this could be used, another thought struck me that I have yet to see anyone talk about that I actually think could be the most important thing that this could mean for the future of how we use AI. And we're going to get into it in today's episode. AI Unchained, Episode 19. What if you had a personal software developer? What is up, guys? Welcome back to AI Unchained. I am Guy Swan, your host, and this is the place for exploring, learning, and diving into the crazy, hype-filled world of AI, focusing on finding our way to a sovereign and self-hosted AI future. I want my AI, not a closed AI server that's watching everything I'm doing. And in that vein, I wanted to finally, we've been doing a lot of post-production stuff on trying to get this right, because we did a live stream of the first episode of Devs Who Can't Code, which is just a series within AI Unchained here. For those of you who do not know, this is YouTube only because obviously we're looking at a lot of code, we're working with applications and stuff, and it just doesn't make any sense in audio. So do not forget to check out the YouTube channel. That is actually coming maybe, I think, published either today or tomorrow. Just kind of depends on how quickly we can get the last little pieces together. And we decided to not do the live stream anymore after trying the first one. Hope and I, we did have a lot of fun with it, but the live stream ended up being a lot longer than it needed to be. So it felt right to hone the content down to exactly what you needed to watch in order to get to the app at the end of it. But then also the live stream video was like super low quality and it constantly was breaking up and going in and out. So we did 100% better to use the local version or local copy of the recording because it's obviously high definition. So for those of you who have not dug into this, I highly encourage it. And I think this is going to be, I really think this is going to be an insanely valuable series. And I'm also curious your thoughts on what you want us to try to build. Because I've got obviously a lot of little things that I think would help me building out macros and a lot of these things. Because as I've mentioned a number of different times, and these are increasingly getting more and more complex, is the idea of tiny apps, the idea of micro apps that I have been building to automate my workflows, to essentially create and systematize like very common recurring tasks and like projects, like standardized file formatting and project formatting and templates and that sort of thing. It has just been a gold mine for those sorts of things. And I am honing them quite a bit. If you haven't seen the other video as well on YouTube, this was kind of this was probably, you could think of this as the very first iteration of Devs Who Can't Code before we realized how the format was going to be. But I built a transcription app that runs locally on my machine, and I use it for every single episode of the podcast, every single episode of AI Unchained, every single episode of Bitcoin Audible. When I am done with it, I drag and drop into what I now am calling Scribe Drop, just because I'm trying to distinguish. I'm getting enough of them that I'm trying to distinguish which ones are stuff that I drop files to and which ones I double click on. But I just drop my files, my audio and or video. It will just pull the audio from it, and which was not difficult. It was, you know, one part of the prompt to just say, recognize what type of file it is and extract the audio if it's a video file. And then it runs it through Whisper. And I'm also looking into different models because I haven't played around with this much and it's been long enough now that I highly suspect there are a lot better models now and more things to choose from. So I might do an update for the Transcribe app and get a new version. Because the old Whisper model that I'm using is, it's certainly not perfect. It's good. It's really good. It's good enough. But it's not perfect. It has a lot of errors. Like, it's not like some amazing transcription. It's probably 94-95% accurate somewhere in there. But it's insanely useful for very simple tasks. One of the things that I do with it quite a bit, and this is also something that we talked about with Parse Prompt Guy, and digging into how exactly you can utilize this stuff, is a lot of these. Unleashed.chat lets you upload text files, ChatGPT does, and a lot of what these things are able to do is that I can take this transcript now and I can make requests. I can basically ask questions and get summaries. And one of my favorite things actually is, you know how I'm constantly saying, oh, I'll add this as a link in the show notes? Well, I would just try to remember what the hell I had said throughout the podcast, or I would try to stop everything that I was doing, go to my notes, you know, find the spot, type out like link to blah, blah, blah. And I'd inevitably still forget to do that once or twice. Like, I'd just kind of get rambling or thinking about something and I would just go off. But one of the best things has been being able to upload the transcript file and then ask, what are all of the things that I said I would link to in the show notes? And then it gives me a bullet point list of all of the stuff that I mentioned. So if you haven't explored this yet and started building your own little macros, your own little apps, know that you can do this in like 15, 30 minutes. And it's getting increasingly more complicated what you are able to build. It's funny, the second episode of Devs Who Can't Code, which will be probably dropping next week, we're getting the final edits on that one as well. That one, we build a Bitcoin price tracker. And what's hilarious is that, absent of the formatting, it actually only took a single request to get ChatGPT to write basically a working version of it. And we just iterated a few things after to get it to look good and format right. And I actually use it. I actually like will bring it up as a Bitcoin price ticker. It pulls the price every like couple of minutes. And I just pull it up and it's like a little thing in my window. Like I literally have it saved as a bookmark. And it's kind of neat. I have my own little Bitcoin price tracker and we built it with AI. So all of that is to say, do not think that this is out of your reach. This is something I even go into this series by trying to make sure that I am not using what I do know in as little as I can, not trying to use my knowledge, but assuming that someone doesn't know the ins and outs, or assuming that someone doesn't know, you know, oh, it's in the app.js file or something like that, and letting the AI guide me through the entire project. And you'll learn a lot just because Hope is there. Hope is a developer, and he can give me those answers and those things. And then we compare, okay, well, where does the AI take us? You know, does this work? How many steps does it take for us to kind of get to the solution and figure out what was wrong? And this honestly has been the biggest productivity gain that I have had with AI. I mean, there's been a lot of pretty amazing things, but this one has consistently proven itself and consistently paid returns in the amount of time that I have saved, to the point that I kind of chastise myself for getting lost and like stuck in recording and doing all of this other work and the meetings and everything now that we've got like a little team. Like I find myself doing an enormous amount of clerical and just business stuff rather than content creation. And I actually kind of beat myself up about it, that I need to be spending time building more things with AI so that I can automate this stuff rather than rushing to just get my to-do list done. And that is how valuable I think this is. So check it out. I will have AI will remind me that I'm going to put the link in the show notes to the first episode, the YouTube episode of Devs Who Can't Code. Now, today I want to talk about what would be, what may very well be a huge advancement in exactly this area. Now, I've watched a number of different videos, and obviously the promotional videos and the benchmarks and all of that stuff, like, it's always going, you're always going to get the best version in the advertisements and the videos they post on social. And a number of people who are developers have said that they weren't super, like, it does seem like a better version, like, there is some sort of an improvement here, but it's not something that you can't already do. And I actually spoke with Hope about this as well, because I sent him the links in our chat, and he was the same way. He said, like, it does look like an improvement. It looks like something that's going to make this easier, but it's already something that you can do in something like GitHub Copilot. However, and this is something that Hope and I kind of expanded on a little bit, and I wanted to give my perspective on it, and I think something is being missed, especially in the developer community, like people who are familiar with GitHub, the people who are familiar with the development process and, you know, doing a debugging thing, and who can just say to ChatGPT or Copilot, like, write me a debugging thing. Okay, run it, get the code, get verbose, blah, blah, blah. And, like, you can kind of guide them through that. And then where, you know, you can test and go through that platform, and you can hit okay and just kind of do the little pieces. You can manually walk through this exact same process. And in that sense, Devin might be slightly, like, might have slightly better answers, maybe. It does seem, at least for the data that they showed, that it completes the tasks and produces a working result better than the other alternatives out there. But what I think is being missed, especially for the people who are familiar with GitHub, the people who are developers, is what this means for accessibility of the people who aren't. In other words, what does this mean not for developers, but what does it mean specifically for the developers who can't code? Now, I want to read a couple of excerpts from, they have a really short blog post introducing it. It's introducing Devin, the first AI software engineer, and setting a new state of the art on the SWE Bench coding benchmark. Meet Devin, the world's first fully autonomous AI software engineer. Devin is a tireless, skilled teammate, equally ready to build alongside you or independently complete tasks for you to review. With Devin, engineers can focus on more interesting problems, and engineering teams can strive for more ambitious goals. Devin's capabilities. With our advances in long-term reasoning and planning, Devin can plan and execute complex engineering tasks requiring thousands of decisions. Devin can recall relevant context at every step, learn over time, and fix mistakes. We've also equipped Devin with common developer tools, including the shell, code editor, and browser within a sandboxed compute environment, everything a human would need to do their work. Finally, we've given Devin the ability to actively collaborate with the user. Devin reports on its progress in real time, accepts feedback, and works together with you through design choices as needed. Here's a sample of what Devin can do. And then they have a link to, they post the handful of videos that they use as examples. Now, I think the first one that they have here of Devin can learn how to use unfamiliar technologies, I think this one is really powerful to show why this is very, very different when it comes to accessibility. Because what she does is in the chat window, so this thing has its own environment and ability to execute code, and then basically to continue to work and iterate on everything that it is doing right in the window that you are working on it with. So essentially what I would have to do, or what any developer would have to do with ChatGPT and having this back and forth conversation, asking it for the next step, get pasting in the error when you have an error. What this is doing is building an implementation, or at least it seems in building an implementation to basically automate the fact that it kind of knows where you're going to go next. If it doesn't have a product, it doesn't have the end result that you're looking for, well, then it assumes that the error that it runs into while it executes is something that it needs to get around. So it then goes ahead and it executes the next command, the next instruction, on just how to get around the error. So you don't have to babysit it. It just keeps running until it gets to a conclusion or has to update or needs your input. Now, the model, or the service at least, is clearly multimodal, which this very first one shows, because what they did is they gave it a blog post about how to generate an image with Stable Diffusion or with an AI image generator, so that it has like your name or it has a word hidden in the image. I'm not sure if you've seen those, but they do look really cool. They're kind of fun to play around with. A lot of people have made some really fun ones on Noster. But she wrote her command and added a blog post with instructions on how to do this. It read the blog post, implemented it, and wrote an app, wrote all of the code necessary in order to execute and do this, to perform this task, and then gave her the results of it. And it looks like she did two different pieces. Like she had an initial question and then a follow-up about like resolution and like what she wanted in the image. And the rest of it was just a few minutes of Devin going through all of the different processes, hitting errors, making corrections, executing and seeing what did work or what wasn't, testing the output to see if it was right, and fixing little edge cases, and then producing the result. This has literally turned the execution of a long, complex task into pure computation. Now, a developer might say, well, I can do this very easily. I can obviously go through all of these steps. ChatGPT can do that. I can do this with ChatGPT. I can do this with GitHub Copilot. Except that the normal person can't. The normal person isn't going to be familiar with GitHub. And the normal person, even many developers, aren't going to want to sit there and babysit going through a whole process, especially if they know it's something simple. Like they just need an image generated. Why would I spend 10 minutes working with ChatGPT to go through all of the different pieces to get an image generated when it's actually just part of a different thing that I am doing, when I can hand over the entire project to Devin, give Devin a couple of minutes while I go get a coffee or do something else or continue working on the major part that's more complex and that I need a deeper amount of focus on in order to get it working, and let Devin take care of everything regarding this particular task, which I just want it to read a blog post to figure out how to do this one little piece of it. That's crazy. And this is also kind of lends back to or reinforces what I think is a previous idea that I've talked about on the show, is that the really brilliant improvements in the major breakthroughs, quote unquote, in AI this year and next year, I think the two most important things to look at are implementation and hardware. We're going to get a wave of really powerful AI-specific hardware, and we are going to get the same tools that we already have, the same AI models and everything, built with a certain degree, with a new implementation and a new type of integration, just like this, that makes them 5 to 10 times more powerful, not because the AI is better, but because the AI doesn't have to stop or require your input or need you to test and give the results of whatever it's trying to accomplish. It can do it by itself. It can integrate directly with your application. It can talk to it. You can work with it like it's going through an entire task, an entire series of what it's trying to build all by itself. That is going to be a huge deal for accessibility and the degree and size and complexity of things that we can build with this sort of tool. This episode is brought to you by Swan Bitcoin, the place to buy your Bitcoin and to learn everything you need to learn about it, as well as essentially just plug your entire life into a Bitcoin standard. Swan is literally the place where if you just want a tiny little bit, you want something easy and simple, and you want to dip your toes into the Bitcoin water, Swan is a perfect place to do that. And they're not going to confuse you. They're not going to encourage you to trade. They're not going to tell you to invest in the next 20 shitcoins. They will not lead you astray or try to fish you for short-term fees, trying to get you to time the market. They'll do the exact opposite. They want to build a long-term relationship. They want you to understand what it is that you are buying and why it matters. Or if you're a hardcore Bitcoiner already and you just want a Bitcoin retirement, you want your business plugged into Bitcoin, you want it on your treasury, you want it on an employee benefits plan, you want a next level multi-sig setup, you want white glove support and the benefits of a multi-sig vault with assisted recovery from Swan, Swan is also the perfect place for that. Check out Swan Bitcoin at swanbitcoin.com/guy. They literally have everything you need. The link and details will be right in the show notes. Now, there's something else that I think Cognition Labs and Devin that they, you know, show as examples do not show this specific thing. One of the things, a couple of the other things that they show is they show it fine-tuning its own AI models. They show it autonomously finding and fixing bugs. In another video, I have a link to all of these videos so that you can actually watch these if you want. They're all like 1-2 minutes. That none of them are long. One of the ones that I thought was really interesting was its ability to actually build and then deploy the app. They actually ran a game. It created a game of life, and then he specifically just went through and asked it to add a bunch of different features and elements of the game to speed up the frame rate and this sort of thing, at a bunch of different points in the game, and it did. It changed these things. It found a bug and corrected it. And then it used Netlify, which it seems familiar, but I don't really know anything about it. But Netlify to execute, so that he could just double click on it. Like, it just gave him a link, and he clicked on the link, and then suddenly he's playing the game. He's watching the game of life, and he can interact with it and create new blocks of stuff in it just by clicking. Now, this is another area where I think accessibility is huge, because you can iterate and test things in your environment, and you can modify and continue to change and add complexity entirely through conversation, and the user doesn't have to touch the code. When this is something that can be run as an application or as within an environment on your computer, there's a couple of takeaways. One that I haven't seen anybody talk about yet, and I want to get to that one in just a second, but the big one is that I could ask it to, in the context of my micro apps, what I do with ChatGPT is I get it to write code, and then I take it and I open up a VS Code Studio, and I start pasting stuff in, and I figure out, you know, does it go into app.js, and then I'm asking ChatGPT, where do I place this? Is it in the right spot? What happens if I get this error? Like, there's a lot of back and forth, and there's also a lot of pre-built knowledge that, even though I'm not a developer or a programmer, I'm really technically skilled. You know, I'm not your average, like, just base level technical literacy. Like, I have a sysadmin cert, a basic systems administration, and I use the terminal quite a bit. And I could write a script if you put a gun to my head and told me to, but I don't want to. But the crazy thing about this is that using Cognition Labs, like, let's say this was in an app on my computer and, you know, it's talking to their API or whatever, is I could go from idea to application without ever touching the code, without ever copying and pasting some block, without ever fighting specifically myself with a debugging situation or trying to figure out what code or what software piece of software or something to implement it in. Like I said, I'm not familiar really with Netlify. I wouldn't have known that that was an option. I would have had to ask Mixtral or ChatGPT, like, which one should I use to visually make this game visually interactive? And then it would have given me another set of instructions and another block of code. But none of that was involved here. The entire situation. The entire course of the conversation with Devin was a conversation about the game. And even if that's not something specifically that they trained it into the AI, that it's the model itself that has some deeper understanding, maybe it's still just ChatGPT, but it's something about the integration and how it is implemented in the interface that allows it to just continue to move forward, to reiterate on itself and call back previous parts of the conversation, to execute code, to actually take what it knows rather than waiting for the human to figure out what the environment is to make this application usable. It already knows. It already says, okay, well, now I need an environment to implement this game, and this is the one I'm going to use, and this is how I'll implement it. That, I think, is a massive deal because it means that people who can't code can work with this without ever touching code. That is a big change, even when comparing it against the incredible value and ability to use it the way it is right now in the normal chat interface with something like Mixtral or ChatGPT. But when I was watching these videos, there's something else about being able to execute and run software inside of this environment. Because one of the things it does, there's another one of these videos saying AI software engineer adds a feature to an open source repository. And that has me wondering one of two things. Is this because they have an incredibly large model, an incredibly large amount of computing power, and they have an enormous context window? Or are they vectorizing the data in order to work with it in a far more efficient way so that the LLM can operate on a smaller context window on a far larger data set? Because if they are, it means that, again, that's another step that's just gone, that they've just kind of put behind the veil of the implementation to just automatically vectorize and start using whatever data the user or the developer or whoever it is needs to work with. It can pull and read from an entire repository. So to a degree, whether again with it's specifically with the context window or it's with vectorizing that data and pulling what is relevant, that it can actually add to that repository in a meaningful sense or make corrections and find errors even on a large data set. Now, there's one more thing. I want to kind of quickly recap what we've hit so far and just kind of the overview, just to kind of lay the groundwork for the next thing that came to my mind. So we've seen Devin write an entire game and execute it so that the user can actually play it right inside the browser. And importantly, as I said, without the user ever having to touch any code. They've also shown that it can read a large, mature repository, make contributions, or add features to it, so it can assess large amounts of data and work with it. Now, a number of the developers that I've watched, like I said earlier, on YouTube and getting their reactions and stuff, some have specifically noted that they're not super impressed because Copilot and a lot of these other AI can actually accomplish in a piecemeal way all of these same tasks. But I think the huge difference here is that Devin is just going through the entire process by itself. The user doesn't have to babysit it and copy and paste a bunch of stuff and execute it and see what the results are and have this lengthy conversation back and forth with the AI. Now, whether this is itself because the model is that much better at any part of the task, that might not actually be the important piece here, but rather that it can continue to iterate, easily recognize the next step that the user is likely to need, like fixing the bug in the code that it just wrote, go ahead and run it, debug it, move on to the next task, etc., until it has the completed project. Now, this allowing a user at a small scale, users like me, to write a program to accomplish some set of tasks without ever touching any code is a big deal. That is a major step for what I perceive is the most important new market here. I think they're trying to appeal to other developers, but I don't think that's the real market here. It's not about making some other developer 100x better, but this is about opening this to an entire world of devs who can't code. But after thinking about this for a little while, and I always hit my pain points and the problems that I have, and I think, how could this apply? How could this change my relationship to those issues? And something immediately struck me that I think is actually huge that I have actually not heard anyone else talk about. And I actually think this could be a huge market and that it would be specifically not considered by the development community because where they are positioned, essentially in the bias of their knowledge. You know how like when you get really knowledgeable, like I do this with Bitcoin, I do this with filmmaking and photography, like a bunch of new things I've done in the past, is that you kind of make this assumption or you forget that what you know specifically, like some people have no basis for, like they're basically starting in the equivalent of kindergarten when it comes to some topic. And you forget just how valuable, you know, 10 years worth of building a skill set and building a knowledge base actually is. But in that same way, this seems like one of those things that might be overlooked by people who are too technically inclined. But I was just thinking about what problems I have on a computer that if I had essentially a developer or a developer who could execute, see errors, and read and then reiterate and make some changes or commit some action necessary to get past that error, where would that be most beneficial to me? And where would it be most beneficial to people who aren't developers? Well, I probably do an episode on this, but there's a fantastic program called Pinocchio. And what Pinocchio does, this is an AI tool that runs tons of different AI, like image generation tools, automatic 1111, comfy UI, focus, face fusion, a bunch of the speech-to-text, the XTTS, Bark, text-to-speech, Whisper, all of these things. It's a pain. It's a huge pain to install all of these things. And almost every one of them is installed from GitHub or even just has some like kind of base UI. Like Midjourney, I cannot believe it, honestly, to this day, that Midjourney is still run over Discord. And I think part of the problem here is that these things are changing and iterating so quickly that there's no time to actually mature the application or the product as is because they're spending all of their time and energy trying to get to the next thing. It's just moving that fast that they have to implement the next feature, they have to implement the new state-of-the-art model, they have to implement the LoRAs, they have to, you know, do all of the next thing to make it better rather than really fix and make robust what they already have. So one thing I've noticed with all of these tools is how often they don't work, how often I run into some problem installing them, and how hard it is to find answers to specific problems. I've ended up using ChatGPT quite a bit, but then again, a lot of ChatGPT stuff, a lot of these AI models are specifically trained on older things. So without being able to give it or being able to give it particular information or it being able to see what's going on, sometimes it's hard to get it. It just kind of gives you like a generic response, like reboot your computer, restart the application, because it's not there. It's not in the environment helping you out. Now, going back to Pinocchio, is a huge step in the right direction and also very relevant to what I'm picturing in using something like Devin and how this could be a huge, huge benefit. So what Pinocchio does is it essentially is an application to install all of these kind of, I don't want to be insulting, but half-assed applications, these applications that are like kind of scrambled, that feel like they're just completely rushed. They're all web UI based and they're all iterating at an insane pace, is to install these all into their own little Docker environments and run all the scripts necessary to update them, get the right version of Python or pip or whatever. And then the user, like me as the user, I just keep clicking OK. Like, I just kind of click yes, like, three times, and it just does its entire process of installing and getting these applications running, and then opening up a web UI within the Pinocchio application. So it's like an application layer built on top to run all of these kind of half-assed applications. It's there to fill in the gap of the complexity of finding, installing, and using all of these tools. And as it gets easier to write larger and larger tool sets and tons more small micro apps and all of these things, like the projects and things that I've been doing and the stuff we've been trying to tackle with devs who can't code, the environment for the number of applications that are built for some very specific environment or operating system or application and doesn't have the time to port it to Mac, doesn't have the time to port it to Windows and all of these other things that a robust, mature application would do, there might be room for another layer to kind of emerge. And something like Devin would be perfect for this. Because thinking about automatic 1111 and the bunch of different things that I had to do to install it and copy it from the GitHub page, clone it from GitHub, and then Focus, which I tried to do the same thing. I didn't even get it working. It wasn't that hard, but there's just so many little steps, and I didn't have the right Python version. God, Jesus, if I have to do another version of Python, the fact that like it breaks every time and you need specifically Python 3.9 to run this one program and then you need 3.11 to run this entirely different program, and so you create your own little environments and you install different versions. I probably have 30 different versions of Python running on this stupid machine in little containers. Well, Pinocchio has specifically automated it by just writing manual scripts for it to do all of the steps necessary for downloading it and then doing maintenance. But what if you had an AI that was doing this? You could give it the basic scripts for installing and operating these applications, or you could just ask it to go to the GitHub page of any random open source repository and tell it to get and run that application, and it could just do all of those steps for you. It could figure out, it could just read error codes. Oh, I don't have the right version of pip. Oh, I don't have ffmpeg installed at all. Looks like I'm going to need Python 3.9, and just have it go through all of that until it has the application up and running. And if the application doesn't have the right environment, maybe instead of using React, it can actually write what is necessary to run it in Electron. Or maybe it could build an installer specific to your computer. And maybe it can run the application, and if something crashes or something unexpected happens that is going to trigger the user to go, this is not how it's supposed to work. It's not supposed to pause on this screen. This isn't supposed to be frozen. I'm supposed to be able to click that button. Well, if it's in an environment that Devin is running in, if it's, you know, created its own little container and it's running this inside of it, maybe it can figure out what's wrong and fix it. Or maybe it can troubleshoot what conflict it might be having with something else and figure out what it needs to change, or maybe even a setting that needs to be altered in order to get it to work. And if it can just continue to try things and iterate, if it wasn't finding the answer or it wasn't figuring it out, what if you could just let it run all night? What if you could go to sleep and give it an hour or two to try to brute force the problem, and maybe even give it a threshold? Like if you're using, let's say it's specifically Cognition Labs and it's via an API, you just give it like a token limit, like a price limit or whatever. It's like, okay, you can pull the API for $50 trying to figure out whatever this problem is. And you know, if you get to $10 and it doesn't seem like you're making any progress, go ahead and cut it short. But if it seems like at $10 you're getting somewhere and there have been changes and improvements, it's just not fully operational yet, well then okay, go ahead and spend the next $10 and reassess at every $10 increment. How much open source, highly closed off to only the technically literate people that you need to run a bunch of commands and open up in a terminal to install programs, applications out there, how many of those things would now be accessible to any user? And how many would be exposed? How many users would be exposed to tools that they didn't even know existed if they had something like Devin that could walk through the process of that installing, of essentially managing any slightly complicated application for the user. And you know, sometimes, like, it's not even a technical problem. It's just that I don't have the time. I can't tell you how many applications that I want to sit down, install, figure out how to run, play around with, see what the tools do, use it to make a meme or something, and it takes me 3 weeks to get to it because just like today, it's 7 o'clock in the afternoon, we're about to have to put Rad to bed really soon, and I'm still recording a podcast, and I record to the end of the day, and then we try to put him down, and then he wakes back up, and I barely get to eat before I'm back in the room with Rad, walking him around, trying to get him back to sleep. And then that goes on until we basically just have to go to sleep, and then I wake up and I'm recording again. And so 2 weeks go by and I never touch this application. And it's not because I don't know how. It's not because I'm not comfortable with the terminal. It's not because GitHub repositories scare me. It's because I don't have the time. It's because when I do have the time, I'm always having to do, I'm putting something else in front of it. Something that matters more or is just something that is just more pressing. Imagine if your computer could sort those issues out for you, and you could just kind of coax it along and add little points about how you may want to make a change or how you want to do it in some particular way. Like maybe you want to isolate this program for some reason or another, and so it just chooses to install it with a, you know, Docker container. Well, maybe a virtual machine that's running Windows, a different operating system. Or maybe you want it locked so that the kids can't get to it. Maybe you want two different programs to be able to use the same AI model, but they only pull from specific folders, so you need it in both folders. But the model's like 20 gigabytes, and you don't have much space on your computer, and you don't know what a symlink is. Well, Devin does. Imagine if those sorts of tricks, those sorts of solutions and trouble and basic troubleshooting skills of a highly technically literate person are now available to everyone, and the ability to set up environments and make custom changes or iterations to how something is run or implemented on your computer is purely an issue of asking it to do that. How many confusing, slightly intimidating, not fully finished, and, you know, the trim isn't quite painted and the edges aren't sanded sort of applications could now be run by basically anyone if they just essentially had an app with a Devin environment inside of it that could then run those apps, that can install, troubleshoot, and operate those programs for the user. Now, Devin doesn't seem to be really set up to do this. It doesn't seem like this is something that they're targeting. But I think this is something that we can see when we go a couple of iterations out and we start thinking about layered implementations of these things. And something that I think Pinocchio is a great example of that is trying to do that. It's just not with AI, but trying to simplify some of the difficulty of working with these applications that just move so fast that it's hard to keep any sort of stable versions of them. And I think that's likely where it's possible we could have AI start filling in gaps, start plugging holes and connecting users and applications that weren't really compatible before. Now, I requested access to Devin. No idea. I'm sure, like, their post has like a million likes or something stupid on Twitter, and they went from almost no followers to almost 100,000, so the number of requests is probably pretty massive, but I want to kind of test it out. If or when I get access, like even if it's just when it's public, I'll be really curious to see how far I can take Devin and how layered of an application system, because one of the things that I'm actually have been thinking of doing, because I've been building so many micro apps, is actually building an app to house all the micro apps so that there's basically one implementation environment and then I can just build modules inside of it. And I think would make it far more kind of like Lego blocks of building a ton of different macros And rather than having to recreate the environment in each of the applications or how it's going to be implemented, I could create one environment that allows me to execute Python scripts and feed it some piece of data or a file, like kind of formalize a simple, robust input system, essentially, and then build a bunch of macros, the little tiny apps inside of it that are all blocks of Python code that it can now take these inputs and produce an output. So I'm really, really curious how far this can be pushed and also how this changes the entire developing environment and the idea of kind of the stage, size, and complexity of an application. I genuinely think software might be taking a turn. Like, we might start thinking of software differently. And I think it also lends itself to the possibility of development in kind of a new layer of software, like kind of between the functions themselves, the functions and the hard code, and how those things get connected to the typical user environment. So that's something that I'm going to keep brainstorming on, and I'm going to keep an eye out for in seeing. I think Pinocchio is a really interesting example of software that runs software, and that there might be a lot more complexity and a lot more variation in sort of that layer of thing, and that an AI agent might be inside of a layer that's running additional software, might be the perfect place to enable access to a whole bunch of things that might not be familiar or comfortable for the typical everyday user. So I'm curious what your thoughts are. If you have gotten access to Devin, or if you played around with it, or seen the videos, I'm really curious your reaction. How important do you think this is? What do you think this means for kind of moving forward? Is this kind of a nothing burger, or is my perspective on the accessibility of this to people who aren't familiar with those environments? Do you think that's as relevant as I seem to think right now? Also, I am always very happy to hear any suggestions or any applications or new AI tools that you are aware of. Please send it to me. There's so much stuff that it's actually really hard to do the balancing act to exploring and testing all of these things. So I would love to hear what you are using. What are you using? What tool do you have? I did not know about Pinocchio, and I cannot believe I didn't know about Pinocchio. I think it's an incredibly useful app. So if you have something like that, let me know, and I will have the links to it in the show notes. By the way, it's not spelled right. It's spelled P-I-N-O-K-I-O, but I will have the link in the show notes so you don't have to go hunting. With that, I think we will close this one out. A huge thank you to Swan Bitcoin and to CoinKite. Swan is where you are going to buy your Bitcoin, and CoinKite is where you're going to get your hardware wallet so that you can keep it safe. Check out my special links and discount code in the show notes. And also, like I said, the link to Cognition Labs and then to the first episode of Devs Who Can't Code will be right there as well. Do not forget to subscribe. Do not forget to like. Do not forget to leave a review. And I will catch you on the next episode of AI Unchained.